Today, from the Wings Archive, Women, War, and WikiLeaks.
Personally, somebody that had spent so much effort into trying to stop this war, that at least if this would be shown to people, that it might give people enough motivation to try to stop the next one.
All right, we'll be engaging.
Roger, go ahead. I can't get them now because they're behind that building.
If those pictures had not been taken, it would have been considered normal. It would have been considered so normal that it would have been invisible.
In October 2010, WikiLeaks released secret U.S. Army field reports about torture, murders of civilians, and other war crimes. While the revelations are horrendous, the culture that carries them out has never been secret. Dr. Cynthia Enlow studies war and globalization from a feminist perspective.
One should never imagine that imperialism is easy to adopt. It's full of confusion, and particularly what to do with women. So I'd like to talk this morning a bit about Abu Ghraib.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Feminist foreign policy analysis is not naive, writes Cynthia Enlow, a professor at Clark University, in her article Masculinity as a Foreign Policy Issue. She specializes in posing questions that non-feminists too often imagine are irrelevant or find awkward to ask. For example, are any of the key actors motivated in part by a desire to appear manly in the eyes of their own principal allies or adversaries? What are the consequences? And does the alleged reasonableness of any foreign policy choice rest on the unexamined assumption that women's issues can be addressed later, that it is men's anxieties that must be dealt with immediately? Today on Wings, we'll hear Dr. Enlow's plenary speech at the 25th United States National Women's Studies Association Conference in June of 2004.
Empire building is not easy. Empire building is full, by the imperialists, full of their confusion. It's full of their debates with each other. It's full of mistakes. It's full of facing resistance. And amongst the greatest confusions have been about both masculinity and about femininity, and particularly what to do with women in the colonizing society and in the colonized society. That is completely missing from the main celebrated texts, if you will, on empire. People who say they're writing about empire have not learned from all the feminist historians who've actually been writing about empire. And as a result, it means that almost all those books, as interesting as they might be, are in fact naive. They do not take into account the lives, the thoughts, the actions of women. And if they don't, that means they've underestimated the amount of power it takes to actually enact imperialism. That's the good news, right? The good news is that no society that was ever colonized was colonized easily. No country that was ever faced with imperial rule gave in easily. That doesn't mean that we know of all the different kinds of resistance. We don't. So I'd like to talk this morning a bit about Abu Ghraib. And I'd like to talk about it because I think that we need a feminist curiosity to make sense of what not only led up to the tortures perpetrated by American men and women in cell block 1A. We also need to have a feminist curiosity to keep track of what we're learning. Do not turn away. Do not think once the pictures are off the front page, once the talk shows have stopped talking about it, don't think there's no more to learn. We are just beginning to learn about what created Abu Ghraib and where we are all complicit in it. When I think about Abu Ghraib and try to follow it. I try to keep track of where all the women are. And here are the women so far. This is not the end of the story. This is probably just the beginning of the story. Here are the women that I have noticed and thought about and puzzled about so far. First, of course, is the woman that the media have made the most of. And that is Lindy England, the woman who you see photographed holding the leash onto the neck of a Iraqi male prisoner. There's also Sabrina Harmon, who is another rank-and-file American soldier in that reservist police unit. But then there are the women that are not in the pictures. First of all is Captain Carolyn Wood. Captain Carolyn Wood is in the U.S. active duty military police. She is really positioned differently in imperialism and differently in the patriarchal conduct of imperialism than are either Lindy England or Sabrina Harmon, because she has joined the military to make it a career. And she is an officer, she's not a rank and file soldier, and in our minds, she's not in the picture. That puts her in a very different place than the two women in the picture. Then there is Barbara Fast. Barbara Fast is a brigadier general. She is also a career officer, a very senior career officer, although not the most senior. Barbara Fast is also in military intelligence, and she, like Captain, much below her, but an officer, Captain Carolyn Wood, she also has served in Afghanistan. And I want to come back to how lessons are exported. Lessons are imported. That's how imperialism works. It's the import and export not only of goods, that is raw cotton or copper. Imperialism works by importing and exporting lessons and then trying to use those lessons in a new setting where they were not first produced. The blue jeans are produced in the Philippines. They are used to create a certain kind of image of oneself in the United States. But that's also true of lessons about interrogation. That's also true about lessons about, quote unquote, the Arab or the Muslim mentality. They too are constructed one place and exported and then imported another place. Carolyn Wood and Barbara Fast were part of the lesson production in Afghanistan. Then there is another general. She's as senior as Barbara Fast, and her name is one that perhaps you have met up with in the press and maybe even have seen photographs and perhaps an interview with her. And that is Janice Karpinski. Janice Karpinski, though, is not in the active duty military anymore of the United States. She is a reservist, and this puts her in quite a different position, but she is the general who was in charge of the reserve military police units that were supposed to be in charge of the prison called Abu Ghraib outside of Baghdad. Then there is the ex-wife of Charles Grainer. Charles Grainer is the much photographed, and he had all his photographs of himself on his own computer, one as a screensaver. Charles Grainer is also a rank and file soldier, and he was married before. And his former wife is the one who has given us a sense of, in fact, what his marital politics were like, that he took from the prison job he had in a civilian prison into his outlook and his imperial actions in Abu Ghraib. That is, Charles Grainer is a certain kind of former husband. He's not just a prison guard former husband. He is an abusive, violent former husband. What information is used when men or women enlist in the U.S. military? What's considered an appropriate question to ask? How often did you beat your wife? We now have figures, even figures that the U.S. Defense Department is willing to admit to. And that's largely, by the way, due to some very particular sorts of liberal feminists inside the Pentagon. And I never dismiss women doing liberal feminist work. It may oftentimes feel inadequate, but don't ever underestimate what it's like to say the word sexism or rape or domestic violence when you are working inside the Pentagon. Don't ever underestimate how much one of the separations that I think about a lot is the separation from those who think of themselves, or maybe other people label them, liberal feminists, and those who think that their feminism has gone deeper and wider. That's not the battle. It is the discussion, but it's not the problem. So a lot of what we know about domestic violence's role in creating a particular culture within the masculinized, expansivist U.S. military, we know because of the work of liberal feminists. Very few radical feminists have taken seriously the lives of women in any military. Very few of them or us have thought that we could learn about imperialism by taking seriously the lives, the thoughts, the silences of women as military wives. So what we know about rape by male soldiers on American women soldiers, we know from the work of liberal feminists such as the attorney of the Miles Foundation, M-I-L-E-S Foundation. They are the group that are currently doing some of the most important feminist work on violence within the U.S. military. To understand Charles Grainer, to understand what he brought from his prison job and his abusive husbanding to Abu Ghraib, to put in the service of the U.S. state, we know from those people who've done the serious, thoughtful, never-ending, hard work on domestic violence and violence against women inside of military families and inside the uniformed military. So Charles Grainer's wife, his former wife, is one of the people that is going to teach us something if we put her, if you will, in the unphotographed picture of Abu Ghraib. We also need to think of Olympia Snowe. Olympia Snowe, as most of you know, is the Republican senator, one of the two Republican senators from Maine. And she is currently on the Senate, the Armed Services Committee. And that committee is the one that has to convince themselves, this is the Republican majority of that committee, has to convince themselves that somehow they have a stake in not ending the investigations. I'm very interested in Olympia Snowe. I mean, many people ask, why doesn't she just switch parties? Right? So she's complicated. Both of the senators from Maine are quite determined now to not let these hearings end. Maine is one of the few states, what's the other one that has two women senators? Are you guys sharp or what? Right. California and Maine. And where else? And Washington State. Let's hear it for Washington State. All right. But these women are very important to think about. these senators, women senators who are Republicans from Maine, what is going through their minds about patriotism, about democracy, about being elected officials, representing whom, about not being seen as soft on military subjects as women representatives. What are they having to conjure up in their own minds to hold the Defense Department accountable when so many people have a stake in them not being held accountable? Then there are the women in Afghanistan and the women in Iraq, and they should not be confused and mushed together. They're quite different in their conditions, even if they have commonalities. But those women who are the women who are supposed to take the men who do survive American military detention in Afghanistan, and that's at several different detainee centers, prisons, and several different detainee centers in Iraq. What about those women? What are they supposed to do to restore the sense of self-esteem of those men who do survive the humiliations and the physical tortures perpetrated upon them while they were under American control? Those women may be conflicted about that. They are the ones that you see, but you never hear interviewed, outside Abu Ghraib. They're the ones who go to watch the buses being driven out of the prison as General Sanchez and the Defense Department have made the collective decision to try and reduce the numbers inside this now scandal-ridden prison. But what about those women? What will be expected of them by their husbands and their fathers and their brothers, by other women in their family? What questions are they expected not to ask? What are they supposed to do to ensure that their men's self-esteem is restored? The restoration of masculinized self-esteem is oftentimes the job that's given to women. It is not necessarily something that is done for the sake of those women's own self-esteem. I don't know what is going on in those families, in those households. What I do know is that we should know. If we want to understand the ways of imperialism, the ways of subjugation, if we want to understand when resistance becomes masculinized and when resistance to imperialism, in fact, is created in a way that actually embraces women's aspirations, women's hopes, women's skills, women's public talents, then we have to know what happens inside of every militarized family in a militarized society, whether that society be Iraq, Afghanistan, the United States, Poland, Britain, the Ukraine. Do we all know the full list of all the countries that the Bush administration has pressed into service? Not France. Though we could learn a lot about imperialism from France. No clean hands here. Just plunged into the muddy waters at different moments. But we need, as we watch what unfolds here, we need to keep track of Captain Wood, General Fast, General Karpinski, Specialist Harmon, Specialist England, the former Mrs. Grainer, the unnamed women in the households where imprisoned men are returning, And until we actually take all of them seriously, we will in fact not know how imperialism works or what its fault lines are. Abu Ghraib looks as if it's anomaly. It is not anomaly. If those pictures had not been taken, it would have been considered normal. It would have been considered so normal that it would have been invisible. Invisibility is what makes militarism work and what makes imperialism work. The naturalization, the trivialization of the normal is what makes distorted structures of power seem as though they are natural and they cannot be contested. What we, all of us here, have done in our lives is look for the confusion, look for the resistance, look for the ambivalence, look for the ambiguity. As we keep watching the Abu Ghraib story, watch how every other country is thinking about it. Reread Hemena Bunster's famous and still almost unique feminist study of how torturers use femininity in order to carry out more quote-unquote effective tortures. Bunster. Hemena with an X. We know something about torture. We know something about humiliation. We know something about interrogation. We know something about distorted power. And we know it because we have a feminist curiosity. We need to listen and keep watching and not let a story that seems like a scandal remain a scandal. It is the tip of a very deep, not talked about, iceberg. It'll take all of us to keep making sense of this. We will have to learn how to read boring memos. We will have to learn how to read UN speak when it's in a convention against torture. Do a feminist analysis of the Convention Against Torture. Do a feminist analysis of the Geneva Conventions. Do a feminist analysis of every single memo that has excused torture up and down the Defense Department and in the legal counsel's office of the White House. Don't think that because women aren't mentioned or because obvious sexualization is not being discussed, that in fact you and we as feminists don't have something to say that otherwise will be missed. We do. Thank you.
Yeah. Cynthia Enloe, recorded at the U.S. National Women's Studies Association in 2004. Her three most recent books are Maneuvers, The International Politics of Militarizing Women's Lives, Globalization and Militarism, Feminists Make the Link, and, in 2010, Nemo's War, Emma's War, Making Feminist Sense of the Iraq War. Today, in 2010, I viewed online the documentary film Wiki Rebels, and I kept my eyes and ears open for the roles of women. Birgitta Jónsdóttir is a member of Iceland's parliament who co-authored and introduced the country's Freedom of Expression Bill.
And they were presenting this idea, which they called Switzerland of Bytes, which was basically to take the tax haven model and transform it into the transparency haven model. Just getting a bill accepted in the parliament is nearly impossible. And this is actually very... this is a huge victory for the parliament to have a proposal of this nature passed through the parliament with everybody saying yes.
As an anti-war activist, Jónsdóttir was moved to start working with WikiLeaks on a film that shows U.S. military killing journalists and other civilians.
personally, somebody that had spent so much effort into trying to stop this war, that at least if this would be shown to people, that it might give people enough motivation to try to stop the next one.
All right, we'll be engaged. Roger, go ahead. I can't get him now because they're behind that building. He's getting up.
Maybe he has a weapon on his hand?
No, I haven't seen one yet.
It is very important to offer a voice to the voiceless. Nobody really believes the people on the ground when they're trying to tell what the war crimes are occurring. And that happened to the people there. So I offered to help with this in any which way possible.
Bushmaster, Crazy Horse, we have individuals going to the scene. Looks like possibly picking up bodies and weapons.
This woman's husband was murdered when he tried to rescue an injured Reuters employee while driving his children to school. Why did they have to kill him, she says.
Why do it?
Julian Assange.
One, because it's fun to kill people. If you've been in that environment, removed from all the effects of killing people for a long time. It's a video game, and we get a high score. The other is, they brag after a kill streak about how many people they kill. I go back to base and go, hey, killed 13 today.
Oh yeah, look at that, right through the windshield.
Several women newscasters and a woman reporter from Al Jazeera are briefly shown in the WikiRebels film.
All right, Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks founder and the target of the rape allegations, joins me now on the line. Thank you so much for speaking to us, Mr. Assange. What do you think about this?
Clearly, it is a smear campaign of some kind.
Described but not seen are two of the three women who pressed charges against Julian Assange in Sweden.
The women don't make any public statements, but the important evening paper Aftonbladet publishes an anonymous interview with one of them, which states that what started as voluntary sex subsequently became what she described as abusive. But she's not afraid of him, and he's not violent.
Birgitte Jansdotter.
That troubled a lot of us that had worked with the organization, the way this case was mixed with WikiLeaks. The way, of course, there must have been a party at the American embassy in Sweden when they read these news. It's like, yes, we don't have to do anything except just to pass this on.
Then there's U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
The United States strongly condemns the illegal disclosure of classified information.
Birgitte Jansdotter.
WikiLeaks has become the sensation because the two last big scoops, and the only scoops that have been actually played into the hands of the mainstream media, are sort of WikiLeaks versus the US or Julian Assange versus the Pentagon. This is not what WikiLeaks is about. It is a site that focuses on all sorts of leaks from all over the world.
The documentary WikiRebels can be found on YouTube. To hear this program again, email wings@wings.org. Special thanks to WORT-FM Madison, Wisconsin, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.